Nice. Kicking off the show with a little taste of Resist and Bite. Brand new music.
Yeah.
You're going to get a little taste. We're going to give you the whole song at the end of today's episode, a whole song called The Myth I'm Living, and you're going to love it. This is the Decibel Geek Podcast. In case you didn't know, my name is Aaron Camaro, and I'm always joined by my awesome friend Chris Sinzak.
Hey, hey.
Album's unleashed, baby. It's back.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one.
We said we'd be doing more of these more often, and here you go, another one. Just weeks after Toby Wright doing Alice in Chains' Jar of Flies, today we've got Tommy Scio, and we're breaking down Tesla's Psychotic Supper.
This is going to be a good one.
Oh, I love this album.
Yeah, me
too. Love this album so much.
And super excited to have Tommy on the show. As I mentioned recently, Tommy's going to be at the Rock and Pod Expo on Saturday, August 15th. Maybe playing at the pre-party on August 14th.
Who else is going to be there that night playing?
Troy Lucetta.
Hmm.
Magic could take place.
That would be amazing.
Nothing confirmed just yet.
So many people would love to see that happen. And if it's in the cards, if the planets align, which you've done everything you can do to align the planets,
yes,
it's got to happen.
Yeah, it would be great. But I know there's going to be a lot of Tesla fans listening to this episode, so I want to put that out there that Troy Lucetta and Tommy Scio will be part of Rock and Pod Weekend,
yes,
August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Expo on the 15th, Hilton Nashville Airport. Go to rockandpod.com, see the full guest list. Other rock stars going to be there. It's going to be a fun weekend. And yeah, we went up to Kentucky today and to a home studio that Tommy's working out of. This is going to be a fun one that you guys are going to really enjoy.
Yeah, there's some magic coming out of that studio up there. I mean, this is a demo version today, what you're going to hear at the end of the episode,
yeah,
but it is just killer and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
But before we get to the festivities at hand, man, we got to take care of our business. And our business is, and always will be, getting the sweet reviews that you awesome people give to us. And we've got a couple of great ones here today. Let's start it out with an Apple Podcast review, because this one's got them all 5 stars. It's entitled, What's in Your Ears? And it goes a little something like this. For me, it's this podcast. Two guys that know hard rock and metal the way me and my friends do. Great conversations, interviews with people in the industry, and a spotlight on new music. You will not be disappointed. That comes to us from DJ Sacrifice via Apple Podcasts.
Awesome.
Badass.
Thanks so much.
I like that a lot. Hey, look here. Could it be? I see some stars. They're pink. It's a Podchaser review. Can you believe it? Fantastic. Oh, it's 2 stars.
Yeah, you're going to hear the review and be like, why is this 2 stars?
Okay.
I think our friend may have messed up on the star reading.
All right, let's check it out. Oh, nice. This comes to us from our good friend Ray Kuhn from the band Dawn of the Rising.
Yes.
They've got a brand new EP out. Yeah, we're going to be spinning some of that for you because they want you to hear it. We want to play it for you. So keep your ears open for that maybe next week.
Mm-hmm.
Review goes like this. I totally dig the Decibel Geek Podcast. 100% kick-ass content and great informative information on my favorite rock and metal artists. Plus, there's some funny comments and topics going on as well. Plus, I have learned about new rock artists I've never heard of before. Like, I was turned on to a group called Animal Drive from Croatia.
Great,
I remember,
man.
Animal Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, awesome. This is one of my new top favorite bands now. Do yourselves a favor and check their show out if you love all things rock and metal. Sincerely, Ray Kuhn.
Thank you, Ray.
Fantastic.
Great review.
Awesome.
Very cool. So then the other people we love, the Geeks of the Week, these are people that shared on Facebook, retweeted on Twitter. Last week's new experiment, Rock Mag 83.
I think it went pretty good, huh?
It did. It went real. Thank you guys so much for the great comments on that. I think everybody seemed to like it.
I can always tell if it's going to be good based on how fun it is to record.
Yeah.
That one was a lot of fun to record, and I'm glad everybody else got a laugh out of it, too.
Yeah. I'm still mad at that dick cheese that was criticizing Rush.
Yeah. That was.
What was her problem?
I don't know. She just don't get it.
Unreal. All right.
We got to do that again.
Absolutely. Geeks of the Week this week are Scott Krautz, Brant Cattell, Aaron Martell, Baco, Joseph Capone, John Phillips, Chris Fretwell, Shane Hebert, Greg Troyan, Christopher Stokes, Simon Catt, Adam Cox, The Bakery Podcast, Brad Schick, Joshua Toomey, Jay Shibulski, Alan Tate, Trevor McDougal, Aaron Baker, Kevin Williams, In Obscuria Podcast, Jeffrey Mendenhall, David Glenn, Mike Parnell, Brian Knapp, Kristen Schimbeck, Sean Cullen, Darren Parkin, Cool World, Bill Elam, Destroyer Senior, Paul Korn, Robin the Hood, Vet Halen, Eloquent Rocker. I love
nice.
That. Jeff Taylor, Ernesto Aguiar, Eladio, David Cathy, and as always,
The Mooger Fooger. All right, those are our people. They care about us. They love us enough to share it, retweet it, let the world know that rock and roll is alive. The Decibel Geek Podcast will never be de-rocked, and we're going to have a good time just celebrating the music we love. Are you ready for Albums Unleashed?
Yes.
Let's do it. Here it is. Tommy Scio breaking it all down for us about the fantastic album Tesla's Psychotic Supper.
Off limits?
Not really, man. I'm a pretty weird on my sleeve type of guy, man. Okay. You can ask me about whores, drugs, anything you want. Fuck them all.
In that order.
Let's start there.
Oh, man.
Well, first off, man, very cool. Thank you for letting us come up here and talk.
Thank
you
for having me, man. I appreciate it a lot, and we're trying to get the word out for Resist and Bite. You know, we got ulterior motives. But...
Of course, yeah. We're going to talk a lot about
that. But awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, so like we try to go through this with talk about the making of a record, start to finish, how it came about. And, you know, you have an interesting perspective from this, as you were heavily involved with the writing and everything on this record. We'll start off, where does this album stand for you in the whole catalog of Tesla stuff you do?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of my favorites, and I know you talked to Troy about that, and he said the same. I think that's probably a consensus among the band, although I'm not going to go there and say that, but I just, it's one of my favorites. You know, it's got a lot of edge, a lot of attitude, less production, and some of the less production stuff was done on purpose.
Yeah.
But we couldn't help just the way we were living back then.
Right.
Just to man, we just, I don't know, we just got it. I just love the feeling of it. There's stuff on there that I probably wouldn't have left on other records as far as screw-ups and things like that. But it just had feeling, and I think we really captured a good thing.
Yeah, it is an awesome album. I've been listening to it all week.
Thank you.
And I've been listening to it years.
Mistakes and all. I mean, there's some really cranky stuff on there, but it, you know, even like rhythmically, I know that the one song we'll talk about it, Don't You Rock Me, I know like my rhythm was a little bit off in the front there, and I was like, I kept telling the guys, and they're like, nah, man, it's, you know, and like, I'm like, oh, I got it, it's got to be perfect. No, and I'm glad I left it.
But that's part of the magic.
That's it. Yeah, that's right. And I, you know, I realize that now. It took me a long time to learn that kind of crap, you know? But yeah.
Yeah, well, the feel is a big part of what
get. Sure. Yeah.
So you guys were coming off major success with the acoustic record.
Yes. And that was funny. It just, I mean, we did it like for $30,000 and it was our biggest selling record. It was great, man. It was just tripping.
It's funny how, you know, stuff that you don't even expect is going to be the big breakthrough all of a sudden.
Not at all.
All of a sudden you're everywhere.
And it was very successful.
We were both in high school when the acoustic one came out, and you couldn't go anywhere without hearing that, the songs from that on the radio.
That's awesome.
For sure.
Yeah, it was popular, man. People were saying we were the ones that started it and all this. Yeah, you know, we weren't. Led Zeppelin, all them guys were doing that stuff. But
right.
We had maybe the first big hit where it was like billed as an acoustic thing, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't many, many years later after that. All of a sudden, it's MTV Unplugged.
And everyone's doing it. Yeah, and I think that's why everyone thought that. But, you know, maybe because there was some of that success. Yeah. There might be a little bit of that.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah.
Basic facts on the album, third studio album. Released November 5th, 1991. Certified platinum on November 5th, 1993, and this is for Baco. That was my that was my actual birthday.
Wow!
That was certified platinum on. So you're welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. What was the plan going into this record? Like, did the record company go, you know, you just had the big acoustic record. Was the record company all over you to do a certain kind
no,
of
at that point, you know, we were pulling our weight. So they were kind of, you know, they didn't tell us much of anything. At that point, you know, we just came off some good records and stuff. Our first record, our second record, like you say, the success of the acoustic record. So they weren't saying much of nothing, just do our thing. But that record, man, I just remember it wasn't coming together. We were still working. We did a week of pre-production in New York. We went to New York to go do the record, and we thought, no, we need a little more work. So we did, got a place there at SIR, and I worked on it another week. And we just, it felt very unprepared compared to other things we had done. And we knew it, but it was like, okay, we got the time book, we're going in, and we rehearsed all we could, and let's do it now. And we knew it would be okay, but it was... not together. Right. And I think that's a little bit of what you hear on the record and that I'm talking about that I like. It's just a little bit of just rubbleness. Okay, we don't really know. Oh, let's go for it. Right. There it is.
Was there stuff written on the road going into this record, or was there anything from the previous record that you used on this one?
Let me think of the songs. Maybe if we go through the songs, I'll be able to remember that.
And we'll get through. We'll get into that.
Yeah, because I can't right off the top of my head think about that.
Yeah, and
where'd the name Psychotic Supper come from?
That is a kind of a paying homage to our mascot, you know, Nikola Tesla, right? Mm-hmm. So he was a really eccentric guy, just fucked up, man. And he would when he ate, he had to have I may not have this exactly right now. My memory serves me, but he had to have a certain amount of fruit on the table, and the silverware had to be a certain way. He couldn't see any if there was a number 13 anywhere. Not good. Wow. So things like that.
Yeah.
So, and you'll see a plate with a 13.
Yeah, I was going to ask about
and that's
that.
What that's all. It's all about him and his little eccentric and how he was just a freak. And that's so we call it psych, because when he had supper, it was fucking psychotic. He was a trip, you know? He was a trippy dude. He's one of those eccentric cats. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's where that comes from.
It's too bad, because otherwise we'd all be enjoying free electricity right now.
Well, that's exactly right. And that, no, J.P. Morgan and Edison, all them cats, weren't going to let that happen. No.
I always love that you know, Tesla would bring something cerebral to the table with something like that.
It's something so and it's no, man, where's the money? It's he didn't give a fuck.
But
he was nuts, man.
But even with the band, I mean, I was talking to my wife this morning, we were listening to the album, and I was just like, it's just so weird that these guys got lumped in with Poison and Warrant and bands that are singing about strippers and partying.
Right, right.
But we're talking about
Edison
ripping off Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
I guess it's just the proximity,
but that gave us
bands.
A lot of integrity for
it
that.
Did, right? Yeah,
you know, we came out of that unscathed, really. You know,
yeah,
for that era, anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
I never got a subject from a Motley Crue record to take to my history teacher. What about this guy?
You can do it with us, man. Absolutely, Edison's medicine.
And
man.
I did that.
Same thing with Edison's medicine. It's about Tesla and Edison and the whole relationship.
Oh, that's a great song. So I was going to get into some. We put out a call for a ton of questions, and I went to some of the Tesla fan groups and stuff. And well, first off, hats off to the Tesla fans. I mean, one of the most loyal fan bases there is. Just seems like you
pretty great.
A real loving relationship between the band and the fans.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not there anymore, so I don't know what's going on now. But I mean, they've always been just very supportive, and just it's been great. And like I say, I'm not a real social butterfly, so I wasn't probably always great to them. It's like I love them, and what they, I mean, you can't do it without them.
Right.
Sure. I don't want to be their best friend. But I just want to do my thing, but God, I love them, you know.
Yeah,
of course.
So, well, you know, coming off the acoustic thing and going into this record, I mean, was it a big life change? I mean, with the hit songs and everything, all of a sudden it's like, you know, things had to have changed pretty dramatically after that record.
After
the acoustic one, you know, after the five.
Yeah, I don't know. We were kind of feeling like the stardom thing and the whole success thing was, we were feeling that from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like more of a continuation of it to me, anyway.
Yeah.
And by then, I was kind of over it. You know, I think the first couple of years, like the first record, I really thought I was something. You know, I thought, wow, man.
Yeah.
I really did it or something, you know. But I don't think Tesla ever really made it to that household name status, really, like a Motley Crue or something like that. Maybe close. But so I don't know. I wasn't as. After a while, I was just kind of over it, I guess.
Yeah.
So. I suppose you guys got the steady.
It was great. I was very happy with our success, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
The one question that I got from a fan that I don't understand, and you might understand this, to ask you where the Green Monster is at, and do you still use it?
The Green Monster is in ownership of the Hard Rock Hotel, and they hung it up in the Sacramento Hard Rock, and I don't believe that Hard Rock's there anymore. I have a feeling it's probably in their vault in Florida in the main office.
I gotcha.
But that's where it would be. They bought it off me, and after a while, I had thrashed that fucking thing so much. I used it on every record. Great guitar. It's a guitar I built when I was a teenager.
Oh, okay.
And I used it on everything. And finally, maybe a few years before I left, a couple years before I left the last time, they wanted some stuff from us, and they gave me way more money than it was worth, and it was all right, it doesn't even work hardly anymore. I thrashed this fucking thing, but that's where it's at.
Wow.
Hard Rock owns it.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's art now.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. It is a piece of art, thing. I don't know if you guys know what guitar he's talking about.
I do not. That's why I was
asking.
It's
a pretty awesome guitar, man. It's
awesome. Cool. So the musical climate was kind of different around 1990, around the time you guys were working on this.
Sort of, yeah.
So were you guys seeing the writing on the wall with the grunge thing coming in?
I don't think I saw it, man. Yeah. I just felt like, I mean, I don't know, man. And that's what, you know, I may say like I was over the stardom thing, but I just, for some reason, was young and dumb and just thought, man, we're going to go on forever. People are going to love us. You know, I don't know what I was thinking, but it wasn't the case, you know, so... I didn't really see it. No, I mean, I seen it all happen and unfolding, and then we did a right around that 95. That 95, we did a record. We did a Bust the Nut record.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. And then the sales on that showed. So we were like, oh wow. And then everything was different. Tesla wasn't, or Geffen wasn't paying as much. And then then I saw it by that time, but not before. And in the mid early 90s, 93, I didn't know what the I thought. Well, we're all right.
So you guys,
because you got to figure at that time, Guns N' Roses is still huge.
We were rocking, man. Yeah, but as far as writing on the wall, those that grunge thing or whatever changed it. Is that, and also the internet and that whole thing changed everything too. You know,
I got you. Cool. So a couple other questions. Michael Barbiero only co-wrote on this album. Is there a reason for that?
Yes, because as I told you, we were struggling a bit with the writing, right? We weren't quite ready, and Jeff just couldn't come up with shit for lyrics, and he likes to come up with stuff, but God forbid he takes lyrics from us, so we let Mike write with him. No, but that's... And so Mike did a few songs that they were just lacking on, and he filled in the blanks, and that was it.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's...
That's the answer to that.
Cool.
Those aren't too risque.
No.
I thought they were going to say, are you still doing heroin or something? I don't
know. No, I don't think anybody asked that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm surprised. They want to give you a lot of shit about that, you know. They want to fuck with you.
That's your business. We're not digging
for I get them on my Facebook page.
Oh, I'm sure you... Well,
junkie and shit. Yeah, it's fucking great.
I think that's the internet for you.
But, people are precious.
We tend to focus on the music, not on all that other shit.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
I laugh. I have a good time with it.
Cool.
I don't mind.
So let's get into the music a little bit. So so it starts off with Change in the Weather. What's the story for that song?
Change in the Weather is a song I wrote and gave it to Jeff, and he ran with that vocally, and it was one of the songs that I wasn't so sure of once it was done. I mean, I thought I kind of liked it, but it wasn't my favorite thing, really. Mm-hmm. And it's turned out to be one of my more favorite songs, but it just didn't start out that way for me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wrote it, and the guys liked it. We put it together. Not a real big story on that one other than put this in your pipe and smoke it. I wanted to be put this in your pipe and smoke it lower, right? Yeah. And Jeff wanted it higher, and I wasn't going to fight him on it. Put this in your pipe and smoke it!
Pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah. Was there kind of a band leader at this time? Like, who was calling the shots for the band at that time?
There never was a band leader, and I can't speak about now, but back then...
Pretty democratic.
Not democratic, but Jeff, a lot had the final say-so, because he had to sell the thing. He had to sing it, so a lot of stuff, and plus the way he was back then, and we were all young, but I mean, he just really, if he had an idea, he would just get very excited, and you didn't even want to deal with trying to go up against that, because he's such a strong personality.
Yeah.
And usually, he was very, and not usually, he's very creative, so a lot of things he would come up with is diamonds, too, so, you know, you just do it. But I wouldn't say he was the leader. No one was the leader, no, but I think we went a lot of directions for Jeff.
Gotcha.
Sure. That makes sense.
So, Michael Barbiero, heavily involved with the record, obviously.
He was. Oh, Mike, every record we've done that he's been involved with, he's a huge part of.
Yeah.
More than Steve Thompson.
Gotcha.
Much more.
Yeah, I was going to ask
about nothing against
there.
Steve. Steve's got an attitude, and he's got some stuff, but it's all about Mike.
So he'd help with arranging and stuff like that?
Mike, everything.
Everything.
He's so musical. He's such a beautiful person, and he's just a badass.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. You guys took direction well.
Engineering everything.
Yeah. You guys would take his direction on a lot of this
stuff.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the results.
He's amazing. If you guys listen to, like, the Guns N' Roses record, that's a prime example of Michael and Steve. Yeah. I don't want to discredit Steve.
Sure.
But I just love Michael's work. But gosh, if you listen to the vibe of that record and what they did with us, they're great.
Yeah.
Great job.
Yeah, the production on this album is awesome. It's like every instrument is exactly where it should be.
But it's a little raw. It's not as smoother as the production, say, on Great Radio Country. And the same. And part of that I contribute to the studio we were at, too, I believe.
What studio were you in?
We were in, I think, Record Plant in New York City, if I'm correct on that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was Record Plant in New York City. And something about this, the sound in there, man, the whole time we were in there, we just felt like we weren't getting the sound right, ever. And that's how I felt. I felt like this record's just not punching. It's just, you know, and I even felt like that on its release, still, like we still didn't totally get it. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until afterwards that everything turned around for me. And I don't know if everyone felt that way about it like I did, like I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I know I did. I felt like I could have maybe been a little bit more sonically better, but I was losing the fact of just what I talked to you about in the beginning of how edgy and just the feeling of it. So and I finally got that later on. You know?
It's got a little bit more of a rawness to it.
It definitely
not so polished.
That's right.
And I think that's
why I like
speaks to
that's
yeah,
why I like it, man.
Now, how many hours a day were you guys putting in on this thing?
Oh, shit. Go there, you know, 9, 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
I'd be there all day, man.
Was there a lot of partying at night after the days?
Oh, yeah. Especially in the New York City, and that's contributed to it all. We were all going out to the clubs and, you know, just getting fucking crazy.
Yeah.
New York City, man.
Yeah.
And just fucking doing it up and doing drugs and fuck yeah, man. Fucking whores.
You hanging out in New York City? You partying with Kiss?
No.
No Ace Frehley
stories? But I did. Steve would like this. He likes the band Carnivore, which I turned him on to, which Peter Steele.
Peter Steele,
right,
yeah.
So, and I love Carnivore, and I turned him on to it. I can't believe it. But anyway, guys from that band were trying to get a hold of us, or a hold of me when we were there, because they knew I liked the band, you know.
Yeah.
We were thanking the Crow on that record. If you look at the thanks, we put Seika, the porn star, we put Cro-Mags.
I was gonna go
all
through
kinds
yeah,
of crazy shit that, you know, we didn't even have. I put a Harley Flanagan from the Cro-Mags in there. I don't know him from
that's,
Adam.
Yeah, that, I just I wanted him, to go through that
yeah,
list with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we'll do
so
it. I can tell you all about
there.
We had a good time, man. We were fucked.
So I brought
man.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
Mainly
yeah.
for that.
Fun.
That's awesome. So the writing of Edison's Medicine, can you go in a little bit about that?
Yeah,
like, whose idea
tell you a lot
was
about
that song to start with?
Okay, so the intro is interesting. Okay, so check it out. We wrote, I think Brian and Frank came over to my house, and we wrote that there, and I wrote a lot on it. But Frank, and we all contributed to it, and then we had a thing, and we recorded at the little rehearsal place we were at. And then one weekend when I wasn't there, something Frank came down and put like this Keith Emerson fucking intro. And we talked about an intro, some kind of epic intro, right?
Yeah, right.
And Frank is so fucking talented. Forget about it. I mean, he's amazing. But this keyboard intro was just so, it was good. You know, it was great. It's Frank, but it just wasn't crazy enough for me.
Right.
So I said, give me a shot at this. Let me just fuck it. And I swear to God, I just went in there and played what you hear on the record.
Yeah.
Just played it. Some goofy, it's the weirdest thing. I don't even know what it is, but I got it down now because I played it so many times. But I just pulled it out of my ass.
Yeah.
What it ended up being the intro is that thing, and it's I love it.
Oh, I do too.
My God,
it's
so fucked. It's just angry motherfucking shit, man.
That's the magic you talk about.
Love it. Fucking A, man. I love it. But that's kind of how that came about. And the song we wrote, like any other, maybe we just kind of put it together. But that's an interesting thing, because I mean, Frank really did a big opus thing with keys, but it was just too polish for it or something. And in the end, he was like, oh yeah, I see it. Right. Tommy's guitar.
There. Yeah. Does that keys intro exist anywhere on tape?
Oh, I'm sure somewhere. I know that all the demos I ever had from Tesla, because I'm not a pack rat, and I throw everything away. Oh. My wife fucking... So I had all kinds of crazy shit that's not... Who knows who has it now? It might be in a dumpster somewhere.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, well, I did it.
That'd be fun
to
hear.
I've thrown away worse shit.
Well, the lyrics on that song, I mean, are incredible. The whole story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, of course, about Tesla and his relationship with Edison and just kind of how he got fucked and all that happy horseshit.
Yeah. And then...
You guys figure if we write a song about the guy, people will stop asking us what our name means?
Right. No, we weren't thinking that. I don't think. That's funny, though.
Oh,
that's funny.
Elon Musk, biggest fan of the band.
Yeah, no, right? I seen him with a shirt of ours on.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, my picture was right on. I was like, all right, man, I'm in with Elon.
Yeah, that's cool.
Tesla.
And then the thing in the middle of the song, the woo, I can't remember the name.
Theremin.
Theremin, yeah.
Frank.
Yeah, who brought that?
Well, now we got to give that up. We're back to Frank. Frank had to get creative somewhere on there, so he brought that theremin in the middle of that, which is just an amazing part.
Wild.
Constructed that was fun too. Yeah, we didn't know how that was going to be until it was what it was. So we just kind of went for it. And a lot of the stuff on the record again was like that because we fucking weren't ready.
Well,
you know,
like
so we were just winging it, man.
Yeah,
fucking winging it.
Sometimes that seems like that's the way
it
works.
I'm telling you,
best.
I was just talking to these guys about that, about the drums you did on the song that I played lead. You know, we did a drum track over a demo to get the track, and then we were going to build on that. And the drum fill he did went with my lead guitar, which I'll just relearn, and well, that's part of the song now. It's fucking beautiful.
Right,
so it all happens so many different ways.
Yeah,
so
it's like
it's
happy
crazy.
Accidents.
Not that that's anything related, but it's just... Different ways you record things, different things can happen.
Yeah, it's weird how sometimes winging it can get a magical result.
Yeah,
sometimes
and it did, man. It did. We got lucky anyway, I think.
That's awesome. I love that song. And then,
thanks.
I'll share this story from this morning. I was telling you on the way here. I was listening to me and my wife were listening to Don't De-Rock Me.
Don't De-Rock Me.
We'd listened to Edison's Medicine before it, and I was like, somebody should start a Tesla tribute band and call it Edison's Medicine. It's
right?
Like a great name for a band.
Sure.
And she's like, well, you should start practicing your guitar some more. And by that by that point, we got to the guitar duel in the middle of Don't De-Rock Me.
Oh,
and she's
yeah.
like, okay, maybe I spoke too soon. I was like, I could practice for months.
Hey, man, I'm making some knucklehead noise in there. Frank's doing all the real technical
shit.
Oh,
my God. The
but
playing on that is insane.
Yeah, it's nuts. I love it. I love it.
It's one of the best guitar duos I've ever heard.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. And, you know, Troy put a fucking solo in there. Oh, I know. On a record, dude. Yeah, it's badass, a drum solo.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
You guys just go off on that song.
Yeah, we did. And that was the intention. You know, I wrote that whole song. I had that Don't De-Rock Me idea. I kept telling the guys when they'd piss me off, Don't De-Rock Me, you mother... Right? And then finally it was like, that's a song title. Don't De-Rock... And then I wrote... And then Jeff filled in the blanks, man.
That's nice. Great.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it.
You guys, awesome. That song is just that's a bar.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you. I agree.
And then it goes to Call It What You Want.
Call It What You Want. Okay, so that's one of Brian's songs. And Brian would bring in songs, and usually with Brian's songs, it was the type of thing where we'd have to kind of... He'd bring in just a real basic sketch of stuff, so we'd really have to kind of doctor it up and really kind of paint the color over it.
Right.
Which is what we did on that, and it came out beautiful.
I think it's a beautiful song.
Yeah. I think so.
And then Song and Emotion, you know, I know the story is that it was written about Steve Clark. Can you go into the story on that?
Yeah. So that's another song I wrote. Frank put the end tag on there. And Jeff just kind of, we talked about maybe kind of a thing to Steve, maybe. And so I think he wrote that with, I think Mike might have helped him write on the lyrics on that song too. So I think they kind of put their heads together on that as far as the lyrics go. But the reason why that came about was because to me, the part in the front and the way I was playing my leads, which were real Steve Clark-y on that song, it reminded me of, that's why it even came to be about Steve.
I was going
to
ask.
It just reminded us of him, the music itself.
That was one of the questions of Song I Rob. Was it intentionally made to sound like Steve Clark?
Well, it wasn't intentionally made to say, it did from the get-go. We just wrote the song and it was like, and I thought, man, that's like Def Leppard, that sounds like Steve. And then it was like, okay, let's write it about
Gotcha. Done some touring with those guys before.
Oh, yeah. Good friends of ours. Sure.
Yeah, so losing guys. Steve must have been a big shocker.
He was, time. You know what? World lost some shit there, man. He's a fucking amazing motherfucker.
Yeah.
He was an amazing motherfucker. He was the attitude in that band.
Yeah.
He was what we're talking about on this record, he was in that band.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Def Leppard changed so much after him.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Amazing guy, man.
Tell us a cool Steve Clark story.
Well... He's a lovely guy, man. I could never hardly understand what the fuck he was saying because he was just so fucking like Scottish and fucked his accent, man. But, he was drinking a lot but he would sleep all day, but he was definitely an alcoholic. And we'd get in the fucking, I remember one time pulling into this fucking hotel and he's in the bar already in there and he's drinking. I'm asking about chicks and shit. And he's just like, he's like I am now. Now I don't give a fuck about those whores. I don't want to fuck. You know, that's how he was back then. And he was drinking and shit. And he would fucking just get, he would get pretty fucked up. But we had some fun, man. You know what I mean? But he was, I'll tell you what, as much as fucked as he was getting in, every night he fucking tore it the fuck up.
Mm.
He was just a badass, man. But I think it hurt him in the end there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Was it, so it's kind of, so.
And I look at, I see that in myself. That could have been me, man.
Yeah.
I was really fucking up where I was killing myself there for a while. And I thought about that shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, once you lose somebody close to you like that, that's got to be a big wake-up call.
I mean, I don't know how close he was necessarily to me. I mean, you know, we were definitely acquaintances out there, and we talked and stuff. But he was just, I just loved what he brought to that. And then he was a kind of a beautiful person and everything.
Yeah.
Sweet guy, yeah.
Awesome. So then that goes into...
Well, let me
yeah.
tag in right here. At the end of Song and Emotion, there's an acoustic guitar part.
Yes.
That tags over into a song on Busted Nut.
I was going to ask about that. Somebody asked about that.
How that came about, but there's some back masking on there. Do you know what they were saying?
Oh, you know, I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember. I don't remember.
About 10 or 15 years ago, a band I was touring with, he had some equipment. I was like, dude, turn that around and speed it up. And I don't remember what it was saying, but it was really positive.
Oh, okay.
That sounds like something yeah. Jeff probably would have done, yeah.
Something Jeff did.
Yep. But, and as far as the thing, I think Frank wanted to maybe like have a reprise of it for yeah, Bust
like,
Enough.
Like,
you know,
it was like an arpeggio.
It was just a little piece of it, yeah.
An arpeggio thing. Yep. Right. And Jeff didn't even know about it until somebody asked him about it. I swear. I don't think
I knew about it until you were just talking about
the
it.
The fans pay more attention than the band does.
I think I'm just figuring it out for myself, buddy.
Yeah, that was the beginning of Mama's Fool on...
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Awesome.
Play a Tesla record backwards. It doesn't tell you to worship the devil. It's just
no.
Like, just smoke weed and drink
smoke
beer.
Yeah, I smoke weed and play bass. That's it.
Don't de-rock me.
Don't de-rock
right.
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Oh, man.
That's funny. I'm having a good old time right here. Steve's an alcoholic. He's fucked. Don't say that I said Steve's an alcoholic. It's not good.
Oh, we can take that out.
Oh, God.
No, don't. keep it in there.
And then Jeff and Frank wrote Time. Is there any memories of doing that song?
Time? Yeah, Time. I fucking couldn't get my fucking... There was a fucking riff that Frank had. It was like you had to stretch your hand to do. Mm-hmm. And I hated it because I had to work. I don't like working. So that fucked me up. Yeah. I had to play that every fucking night because we did it live on that tour, and it's a great song. I love it. I think it's interesting. And just, we had the fucking, Jeff had the actual alarm, you know, at the end, and live, you put the mic up to it. And we had a good time with it. I think it's a pretty cool song.
Of every tour, do we have to put Time in the set?
Oh my God, kill me. There's actually worse ones than that, but that one I just remember. I don't know how to play. I can't remember how to play it now, but it was a stretcher.
And then Government Personnel, which, you know, 58 seconds.
Government Personnel was just fun. You know, we recorded that outside of Bearsville Studio. Outside, there was a dog out there. You can hear it barking.
Yeah.
And it was totally live. That whole thing is live. Mm-hmm. I was playing a mandolin on it. Just for fun to put a fun thing to put in front of freedom slaves, and it kind of tied into it because the freedom slaves is about how the government's fucked and wars and all this shit.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the people that, you know, I asked for questions for that, like I had posted a screenshot of me playing this record the other day, and like, what do you think of this record? And Freedom Slaves, like, almost was like the dominant one that people love.
It's fucking amazing, great song.
Yeah.
playing much on that one. I think Frank wrote most of that. Man, that fucking song's badass. Yeah. Man. Fuck. I love it.
And I guess also applies to today in a lot of
Yeah, things. No, yeah. And I remember, like, I liked to play it live, too. It was nice to play live. It was fun.
Yeah.
Rocking fucking song.
And then you and Jeff wrote Had Enough.
Had Enough, we sure did.
Yeah.
That's just about getting fucked up.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Simple as that.
Pretty much, man. The more I drink, the more I smoke, the better she looks. And baby, that's a whole lot better than before.
Having a good time.
You guys were truly in your element.
Now that was one I really pushed, of course. I mean, I wrote it, and you know, I was just fucking. I loved what I was doing there, and I pushed. I remember pushing that one on Jeff because I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was edgy and cool and shit. And yeah, he did it. Did it up. And we're just talking about the white horse at the end about smack and shit. That was before I even was doing smack, but it's,
wow,
it's pretty funny.
Mm. Well, what can you tell me about What You Give? Obviously, it's one of the more well-known tracks from the band.
Yeah, What You Give was a tough one. We re-recorded it up in Bearsville. Mm-hmm. We did it in the studio I told you about, but we weren't getting the sound. Remember I told you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we cut there, and we just weren't happy with it. So we actually spent a week up in Bearsville and recut it there, mm-hmm, and that's the version you hear on there. So gotcha. It was a little bit of a struggle. And that songwritingness, we had, that's what, talk about songs we had on other, we had that during, that idea was floating around during Great Radio Conference.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay. It was way back, it took us forever to write it, and then it took us forever to get it right on the recording. Gotcha. So it was just hell. But a great song.
It's an amazing song. Yeah,
turned out, I mean, we did it.
Yeah.
Right?
One of those timeless ones, does it? It fits in almost any era.
I love it, man. And that's one of those ones where my guitar, you know, I play all the leads on it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not perfect at all, man. It's, but it's cranky, man. It's just, I love it. You're the one that makes me happy.
Some of the playing with you and Frank on this record, am I wrong in hearing a little bit of Thin Lizzy influence in some of the lead?
I think you hear that probably on anything we do, probably, because, I mean, they were a huge influence on it. Although, when I think about it, I think me and Steve take advantage of harmonies more in this thing I'm doing, in Resistant Bite, than me and Frank ever did. But the interesting thing about me and Frank is Frank was so good, and I'm not a real technical guy, and I always cap on myself and say I suck and all this shit.
You gotta be kidding.
But it was really... I never wanted to learn anything from him because I didn't want to be close. I wanted to be totally different. So I could have really copped a lot of cool things from Frank, but I didn't. And but the one thing is me and Frank didn't really talk about parts, like leads, who's going to do what. We just did it.
Okay.
And it was really beautiful like that.
So you guys didn't really think out, like, who's
going
to play this solo? We didn't
ever. It was just, he would just start, every now and then it would be, hey, Tommy, I want to fucking hit that. Yeah, man, you know, but very rarely.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about it, and didn't talk about we should be, like how me and Steve do, let's do a double, you know, it just, and I like that double D stuff. I wish we would have done more of it, actually.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
I love the sound of two guitars.
Yeah, me too. And I don't know, that's where I'm getting to, is I think I wish we would have done more of it.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
Frank. Because Frank's, I love playing with him.
Certain times when I hear stuff on the record, I'm like, I can hear Thin Lizzy in that. Because I can hear the influence.
Yeah, sure, sure. Well, actually, like a song like Call It What You Want.
Yeah.
You know, the harmony in that is kind of reminiscent of that.
What's your favorite Thin Lizzy stuff? Just curious.
I don't know. Probably what's that? I like that cowboy song, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I like, you know, the Jailbreaks and all that, too.
Well, you kind of remind me playing wise of Brian Robertson a little bit. Like, yeah. I like a similar type
pretty
of player.
I don't know, man. I'm kind of a. I just got my own thing, you know. I got kind of my own style because I don't really know what I'm
but
doing.
But he was more of a loose, off the cuff player.
Yeah, sure.
And that's
I can see that.
And Frank's more of a Gary Moore type.
Yeah.
Type player.
Definitely Frank's a monster.
Yeah. I think that's what makes it work with you two.
Well, it was. I mean, that's the thing, you know. For whatever reason, you know. And that's kind of like in this band why I came around to Steve, because me and Steve work a lot. Steve's a monster on guitar. Mm. And I need that in a band, man. I need someone that's really fucking happening so it goes up against my thing and just fucks it up and, you know, mixes in good. And that's me and Frank had the same thing.
It's like it's a good friction there.
It is, yep. Tension, yep.
Gotcha. So then Stir It Up. What's the story on Stir It Up?
Stir It Up, I wrote. I thought it was fucking badass. I tried to write like a pop song, and I love it. Tell you much about it, really. I don't know. We all just kind of liked it, and Jeff just jumped on it and wrote them lyrics, and the colonel plays the drums, talking about Troy in there, because you know Troy would fucking tell us like he's the general. Mother, you gotta do it. So he said, and the colonel beats the drum, and he would look at me live. There's our boss right back there. We'd fuck with him. We had fun with him at his expense.
Yeah, he mentioned that when we interviewed. He's like, Tommy liked to mess with me a lot.
I did. I won't even tell you half the names I came up for the name Troy.
I think he told us a few.
Did he?
I'm trying to remember what they were, but he told me about a couple of nicknames
there's a good couple of memorable. I won't say because I love Troy, and he's such a beautiful guy.
No, he had good memories.
I'm bad, man. I joke bad. So I'm sorry that ahead of time. I'm a bad guy.
But I gave us the impression that you were more of the prankster of the band. Than
I don't know about prankster, but I just talk a lot of shit and I shouldn't. Fuck. I don't know.
It's all out of love, right?
It is. Yeah. That's absolutely. Absolutely. I just like to have fun. You got it. Well, at other people's expense.
And then almost everybody's credited on Can't Stop.
Can't Stop. Not my favorite thing.
No?
No, not at all. Didn't want to put it on
kind of
there,
a beatly,
didn't enjoy it,
sound.
Don't like it, and don't want nothing to do with it.
Definitely more of the outlier sound on the album.
Just I don't think it's a great song myself.
So you call
that we had better songs that could have gone on there, is my opinion on that.
Is there anything that got released later that you would have put on this?
I wouldn't have wanted to. I'd never have liked it. But that's just me. It doesn't mean I talk to people with songs I don't like on Into the Now. You know, there's songs on there like there's a song Brian wrote. I just fucking hated it, man. But everyone wanted to do it, and sure as shit, the fans love this fucking song, man.
I guess you never know.
So what do I know? That's what I always say. I may not like it, but doesn't mean I'm right.
Yeah.
You know.
Were there a lot of extra songs recorded for this?
No, I wouldn't say a lot ever for anything because we were always just had trouble getting because Jeff always wanted to write the lyrics so he could believe it and feel it and that. So, but he was really slow at getting there. So we never really had a lot. We had a lot of extra music ideas, but not full-ass songs. No, never, hardly ever.
So were there a lot of times you guys were waiting around for Jeff to come up with the lyrics?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's the curse of being a singer,
Well, you know, he wanted to do it that way, and he does a great job. He's a great lyricist, and I think it probably paid off in the end, but it gets frustrating.
Yeah,
sure it pays off.
Sure. We'll just go to the club in New York.
And that's part of being in a band, man. You know what I mean? I mean, I've learned so much over the years, like doing this thing we're doing now. God, it's just so great because we've all been there. Mm-hmm. And there's not really a lot of bullshit, you know, so it's cool.
That's good. Cool. And then one of Aaron's favorite songs, and Talk About It.
Yeah. That was a fun song, right?
Yeah, real fun song.
That's a Frank song. He wrote that, and then Jeff just got all smoked some weed on there. I like it. I mean, it's just a fun song. You know, I love the blues breakdown. The middle just gets all slow and sexy and fucking stoned and just, I don't know. That song.
It's a fun way to end a record.
Especially at the age I was when it came
right?
out.
Yeah, perfect. Talk about it. Yeah. Son of a bitch.
They're singing about us.
That's right. That's right. We're right there with you, brother. Damn.
And we talked about Michael already. I'll talk about some of the other personnel in the room. Lee Anthony. What do you remember about Lee Anthony?
Lee Anthony. What did they do?
Mixing assistant. Although you may not even see
him.
I don't think
I remember Lee Anthony. I do remember. Name some other names on
it. Let's see.
There's one guy
George
I remember.
George Cowan.
No. George Cowan? Yeah.
Yeah, engineer.
He's an engineer. He worked on some of our other records.
Victor Deglio.
Victor. Victor was the main he was the main engineer on that record when we were at the plant. That's the guy I remember. Victor, we had a lot of fun with him.
Okay.
We'd fuck him up. He's a great guy, man. And then, I love him. I don't know what he's doing these days, but he's a good guy.
And then somebody named Lolly Grodner. Another mixing assistant. These are probably
these are just second assistants. Yeah. I don't know who they were.
Oh, you've got the list there?
Yeah, I got a real good. This is the special thanks to all the beautiful people, animals, family, friends, and fans.
That's Jeff for sure.
There's some wild stuff in here. Let's see. What are some of my favorites here? What's the Hyatt restaurant?
The Hyatt restaurant in Sacramento, we're talking about there. Because we'd go there, and I think that's what that's about. No big deal.
Dr. Abdo Fadul.
That, I think, might be one of Brian's doctors.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Where are some of the other wacky ones?
Sure.
Okay. Operation Desert Storm.
Operation Desert Storm. Thank that. Yeah. Got to give it up for the troops.
The India on J Street.
That's the Indian restaurant on J Street. It's called The India. It's a wonderful restaurant. I don't know if it's still there, but it's awesome. We love Indian food.
Right on. Sid Fernandez and Sid Vicious.
Well, Sid Fernandez.
Sid Fernandez. Bats. Brian was a kind of a punter, and he'd all get up his ass and ask him to hang out, and he would. And they were friends. Brian does that.
It's a Mets pitcher.
And then Sid Vicious. That was me. He's my idol. He's a fuck up, but he's beautiful, and I love him.
Right on. Let's see. The Philippines.
The Philippines. My wife is from the Philippines, and I love the Philippines because my wife's from the Philippines.
The priest.
The priest is the... You're wearing the shirt. You shouldn't have to ask.
I was wondering.
That.
Yeah, I was going to say. The priest?
The priest.
The priest.
That's who we're talking about.
Gotcha. Let's see. Alcoholic.
I think that's self-explanatory.
Don Vito.
Don Vito is like... basically, Don Vito is... Howard Ungerleiter. I don't know if you know who he is. But
he's worked with Rush. Right?
He's worked with Rush forever.
Yeah.
And he did tour managing and lighting for us forever. And he's just a great guy and we love him. And he's our Don Vito. He's among other nicknames.
Right on.
That's the one that made it.
Voyeur Vision.
That's
I was going to ask about this, but I didn't want to say anything.
That's a channel in New York. It's like a cable channel, yeah. And they got fucking... I've turned it on coming home from the studio. You turn it on, there's this guy with this dick that's almost down to the floor, and he's just dancing around like this, and the dick's going. And that's voyeur vision. You're watching these nude people, not fucking,
right,
but just getting crazy and doing crazy shit. That's voyeur vision.
And that was a channel in New York.
It was a channel in New York, and they would have locals go in there and do their thing, man. That's that. What I my takeaway is this guy with this huge ass dick dancing. That's what I remember.
Wow. On CTV.
It was crazy.
Hey, Ted, fuck you.
That's Jeff, because he was all fucking on Ted, because Ted kills animals, but yet Jeff eats meat.
Oh, Ted Nugent?
What the fuck are you talking about? It's just silly. But, you know, even after, I think, the first time we met Ted, after that, Ted was fucking, he came backstage and fucked him. Where's that guy in Tesla that was right? You know, fucking with Jeff.
That's awesome. Funny. Let's see what else we got in here. Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper, he's a great actor.
Yeah. Give him his props in the Tesla album.
You guys make great use of your space.
Great fucking record. He was on that Blue Velvet. Well, I love Dennis Hopper. Great he's movie. Great. Great movie. Yeah.
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Well, yeah. Blue, that's,
what
yeah,
what
Blue
can Velvet. I say, man? Where do you, where's it at?
Blue Ribbon. The Closet?
The Closet? I think The Closet was a reference to just being kind of weird and, you know, The Closet, being in the closet about shit, but I'm not sure.
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali.
Well, see. Ecuador.
Ecuador? I'm not sure. Oh, that's because Brian's wife was Ecuadorian. I know what that's about. I think that's what that's about.
Jet skis?
Jet skis. We were into jet skis back then.
Proto thanks to jet skis.
I had some jet skis at that time.
Ratchet F. Hayes.
That is my alter ego.
Yeah.
Nice. Ratchet F. Hayes?
Hi, I'm Ratchet Hayes, and I play bass. That's Ratchet right there.
Nice.
He wears a dress. Hi, I'm Ratchet Hayes. I wear a dress and I play bass. Anyway, he's like he would play bass in all these other. I play bass in these other like side like metal bands, and I would wear a dress and paint my face up and this kind of shit. You know,
you Ratchet PH.
Ratchet Hayes it up.
Nice.
That's me.
Scummy Pigstein.
That's Ratchet's partner.
So your alter ego has an alter partner.
Yeah, that's correct.
Nice. I love getting the stories about the songs, but I think this is my favorite part of the interview.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to also send out a thank you to Vomit.
Vomit is the guitar player that was in one of the bands that Ratchet and Scummy. Vomit was the guitar player.
I think you've got your next project.
Yeah. They keep wanting to get back together, those boys.
I don't know. Is Douchewood available?
Douchewood was the drummer.
Hold on. Hey, good.
Well, his name was Darren. We called him Douchewood. There it is.
Chrome Dome.
Chrome Dome, that's a Brian reference. I don't know what it is about, but that's Brian, I know.
Joe Mama, Joe Sista, and Joe Grandma, too.
That's Brian, Frank, Jeff type shit.
Buckwheat.
That's Brian.
Sack Babes.
That's me, I believe. Because I fucked all these chicks in Sacramento.
It's the greatest album credits ever.
Sack Babes. Sacramento Babes. Yep.
Sega Genesis and Frosted Flakes.
Yep. You get Sega. Should have Sega in there, the porn star. She's in there somewhere.
Must be working my way down. Vince.
Vince? I don't know what Vince they're referring to.
Jimi Hendrix.
Jimmy?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah.
Harley Flanagan.
That's the bass player from the Cro-Mags that I was telling you about earlier.
Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
Jimmy Page.
Hell yeah.
Motley Crue, Poison, yeah. David Lee Roth, Alice Cooper, Def Leppard. All friends, right?
Yes, sir.
John Wagner and the Tesla Memorial Society.
Okay, that's the guy that was running that thing.
And all psychos everywhere.
You didn't see Seika in there.
I don't see her in there.
No, I thought she was on this record. I thought for sure she was. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I missed it.
You know what I'm talking about, though. You know, the old porn
I've heard of her.
Seika.
Of course I know who Seika is.
Seika, you know. But I thought she was on this. Maybe I'm thinking of another record. I may be wrong about that.
Yeah, I don't see her on here.
Right, well, we have to do this again and get the album credits for that.
Figure out which album she's on. I'll have to take a look at that.
Let me see that.
That'll be our best.
How do you like how I was posing? Just like this.
Yeah. You're the one that actually looks like you're having a psychotic suffer.
Yeah, well, I was trying. Break. They told us all that they had these Hollywood pictures and they wanted us to pose like that. So I did. And then the other guys didn't do it.
Fuckers. It was a joke.
I love how it folds out to a big picture.
Yeah.
I don't see it in either. I don't have my glasses. That disturbs me that I think that, but it's not there.
Maybe a different one.
Maybe. I guess so. That's what I'm talking
pretty
about.
Cool.
Let me make sure. Let me see if I got any fan questions I missed, because I think I got most of them worked in with what you were telling us.
There was one in there about I don't remember who put it in, but it was the Guns N' Roses User Your Delusion 1 and 2 were released like just right after this came out. You think that maybe affected some of the sales on this?
I don't know, because I mean, it went platinum. It did okay, and that was kind of par for the course for us at the time.
You felt like Geffen did a good push behind it at the time?
Yeah. We did a headlining tour. Yeah, they did a lot of promo stuff for
it. That's
what they did, like a menu of all the songs, and it was like,
I remember that.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
They did good.
Okay.
They did good.
Our friend BJ Cramp, he asked another podcast, and he asked Troy the same question. He always thought that you put two ballads back to back in the same spot on side two of Great Radio and Psychotic Supper on purpose. Similar sequencing for both records, but Troy said he doesn't think it was on purpose.
I don't think it was on purpose, and I never liked our sequencing on any of our records myself. No, but I never had a say in it. It was always like Jeff would fucking freak out if it wasn't a certain way or something, so I just like, oh, whatever, I don't want to get into that.
Yeah. Would you have picked a different opener for this record than Changing the Weather?
I don't know if I would have or not now, and I don't know if I did what it would have been back then.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mind that sequencing as much as some of the other stuff you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Back to back.
What, were any of the songs on Bust a Nut leftovers from this album?
I think there might have been a couple. I can tell you a song that they did recently without me is a song that we had before Bust a Nut.
What's that?
Better Off Without You.
Oh, yeah?
That song, I played it with them. We worked that up many times.
Oh, okay.
And it didn't get released until with the other guitar player that's with them now.
Yeah.
So that's a... But I was there when we did that.
Yeah.
But so stuff like that happens. But I can't remember any exact songs that were, like, from Bust a Nut that we didn't make it. I can't really remember.
Had a lot of people asking, you know, can you tell which solo is you on which song and stuff like that. I mean,
can I tell?
Yeah, but I mean, we'd have to actually sit down and listen to the songs.
What do you mean, can I tell?
Like,
I
can tell.
You can tell.
Yeah, you can tell, but like, can you tell the listeners which
solo? Oh, solos, that's a different thing.
We would have
thing.
To sit down in front of
a whole nother
speaker and do that. Sure. But there was a lot of people wanting to know who was you and which one
well,
was
they,
you.
Well, the guitar player that sounds like he knows what he's doing is Frank. The other guy that's fucking crazy and shit is me.
Well, I think that goes back, and I think you and Frank are one of the greatest guitar duos of our time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Without a doubt.
Thank you.
I think it's that compliment.
And don't get me wrong, I don't talk myself down. I'm very proud of what I bring to it, but I also am realistic and know. You know, I'm not no technical fucking virtuoso type cat.
Yeah.
Frank is, and it was great together.
Right. That's what makes it work.
Absolutely.
So good,
I agree.
Yeah.
So overall, I mean, but overall, you look back pretty fondly on this record. I mean, it's
absolutely,
it's
very much so.
Yeah, I know you said there's some things you would change, but I think that's true of any artist.
Sure, absolutely. Any record I put out is like that. Like, something you regret.
No album is never really finished in the artist.
That's
eyes.
Absolutely right.
Right on.
You got that right.
So speaking of unfinished records, let's talk about the new one.
Yeah.
Resistant Bite, man. We're working on it right now, man, as we speak. I mean, we've just been pumping out songs since we got Nathan, our singer, now. We've got 12 songs completed. He's still got to sing on three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But and we're putting probably together another 6 or 7 on this trip. So by the time we're done with it, I think we're going to have about 20 songs to choose from for a record. Awesome. And we're just trying to get them all shiny and nice as demos. Like I told you about Myth, it's a demo, but we got it sounding almost like a record. And it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing right now, trying to get enough songs to actually choose a diverse record and, you know, have songs to choose from, trying to get a deal. And we're also going to start rehearsing for live, too. We want to go play and make some money and have fun. Yeah.
Obviously. Awesome. Will there be any Tesla tunes in the set?
Absolutely. Yeah, because we're going to book it, Tommy, formerly of Tesla and all that. So
gotcha.
The promoters will want that, and we'll do like 5 or 6 tunes or whatever.
Well, I guess people's ears to perk up, and then they can hear the new material. Yeah. That's cool.
Got to do that.
And we're at Holy Smoke Studio.
That is correct.
John Daniel's place up here in Kentucky.
That is correct.
Who was nice enough to invite us up here to
do
this.
I know, Nico. John's awesome.
Very,
nice guy.
Very great place, and we're excited to hear some of the music. You can find you guys at Resist and Bite Band on the social media, right?
I believe that's the thing.
Yeah.
Pretty much everywhere. Wherever there is social media.
Are you a big social media guy?
I'm not very good at it. I get on a computer and get very overwhelmed and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can do stuff on it, kind of like go shopping. Like, you know, but I'm not really good. Once I start navigating around, I get all lost and all these things pop up and I just get overwhelmed.
Yeah. Will there be any... Well, I guess it depends on the deal you end up getting with this band, but I mean, I would hope that there's some vinyl to come from this project.
Oh, I would love that. I just, you know, I don't know that or anything, and I didn't really even think of that. I mean, that would be cool. I mean, I keep thinking the songs are so good. I'm loving what we're doing. I just believe in it so much. I think we should get, like, a major label, but then again, I don't even know about that anymore. Maybe it's better to get a kind of, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. So, but yeah, I would love that to happen.
Yeah.
That'd be fun, man.
What's your thoughts on the current state of the music climate these days compared to back in the day?
Well, I don't know
exactly
about it that much because I just not really listening to radios and all that much. I couldn't really tell you, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I don't hear anything like what we're doing when I do have it on. The stuff we're doing right now is on the verge sometime, I think, of being dated, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, just a little bit of a throwback, but with some just nice new edge on it. And I don't know. I just believe in it.
So we're not going to hear any, like, Post Malone remix of
No.
Like, oh, good.
It's pretty edgy. I can't get away from that just with my style. Right. And we have been doing, so far, a lot of the songs I've written. I mean, most of them are songs I've written, so they just have my kind of stamp on them anyway.
Right.
A lot of them.
Well, and that's what people are going to want out of a Tommy Steele
you know, we just try and take the best ones, whatever that is, you know.
Yeah.
Whether I write them, I don't care. You know, Dave writes them, and Dave writes too. We all do. So
nice.
we're all getting in there, but so far, yeah, I'd say like, you know, 2/3 of them are my songs. So.
Very cool.
I look forward to hearing it, man. Really
cool.
am.
Cool.
You know,
well, check out Myth, man.
The more rock and roll, the better nowadays.
Yeah, check out Myth, man. I think you'll like
it. We'll take you in and let you guys hear.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, come in.
Yeah,
and
we definitely want to hear some of the stuff.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to be playing. So, when you hear that song, that's what it is. It's Resist and Bite. The song's called The Myth I'm Living. So, you definitely want to check that out.
And for my own selfish reasons, you will be a guest at the Rock and Pod Expo coming up in August.
I will.
So, happy to have you there.
Thank you.
And
thanks for having me. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. Tesla fans come out and meet Tommy and meet all the other people. It's going to be a good time. And Troy's going to be there, too.
Uh-oh! Yeah.
You're going to be in a room full of people who just, even in 2020, refuse to be D-rocked.
Yeah. I like that.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this, mate.
Yeah. Awesome.
Come listen to the song, man.
Yeah. I don't know if we're doing it.
Of the shame that I'm going through. The other side is it came from a fame that just isn't even true.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.